obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
It's now my pleasure to introduce the chair from last year's conference and all the way from Oakland, California. They are.
Snow peas. Thank you. Oh, there's a lot of people here. So I want to first say that I don't speak for AA. I speak solely for myself. So if you don't hear something that you like, please continue to go to other meetings. You eventually will. I promise you that. So my name is Faye, and I am an alcoholic and a drug addict. There's lots of ways to do service in AA, and one of the ways is to share. And I have probably shared, my first thing I'm going to tell you is my sobriety date is July 9th, 1984. So that's a lot of time, kind of, and I have shared at the group level this many. Because I hate to share. I hate it. So, but doesn't mean you don't have to do it. I mean, you do what you need to do for the program. But I'm just saying for myself that I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't want to be visible. I don't want you to know who I am. In my family, it was humiliating to be visible. So that's my background. All right, so. Wonder how many more times I can say so. What do you think? I was born 60 years ago. I'm the first child in a family of a drug addict, alcoholic, and codependency was in my family. Growing up in the 50s was, you know, growing up in the 50s, a lot of comfort food, white bread, going to mass every Sunday. My father was the alcoholic in the family. Oh, before I start, how much time do I have?
3 days.
3 days. Okay, you asked for it. No, really. How much time do I have? Will somebody tell me? 30 minutes, okay. Thank you. So my father is the alcoholic in the family, and one of the other things he did while drinking was womanizing. So he would be with other women and chase other women and leave our family. There was some sort of reconciliation between he and my mother once or twice in the first few years that they were married, and it became a pattern. So my father would drink and be with other women, come back to the family for a year or two. Drink and be with other women, come back in family for a year or two. Each time I was okay with my mother letting him back in the first few times, but after 5 or 10, I mean, what's the story here? So it was really hard on us. By that time, there's four kids in the family, all total. And it was hard on us. One of the reasons it was hard on us, because every time he came back, we moved. So we moved around Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey quite a few times. And it was hard to put down roots. It was hard to get to know people. You know, school was really intense because we never knew when we were coming or going. But one of the benefits of him leaving was that as the oldest in the 50s, I got to be in charge when he wasn't there. And I did a really great job, I think. I have 3 lovely siblings who are all doing really great in the world, and I do sometimes take a little credit for that. But being 10 years old and being responsible for 2 sisters who were 8 and 6 and responsible to cook and clean and do laundry and still go to school, I didn't have too much time to be a child, so that was hard on me. And when I found out that the theme this year was "Don't take yourself too seriously," I thought, "Oh my God, another reason not to share because I'm so serious. I'm so serious. I'll do anything not to share. Believe me." My first memory of alcohol, I don't really remember my first drink, but my first real memory of alcohol was I was babysitting with a friend of mine, and we were trying to steal alcohol from the person's house that we were babysitting in. And so we were pouring it into a plastic bag because we didn't want to take anything from the people's house. And we continued to pour it in the bag, but like nothing was in the bottom of the bag when we realized that the bag was one of those ones that fruit comes in that has holes. And as we realize this, we hear the car door slam, and we look outside, and it's the woman who lives there. So we frantically took down, found the very first thing we could to wipe it up, and it was her velvet dress hanging in the... So, needless to say, my friend was never asked to babysit back there again. So I would steal booze from my parents. My friends would steal booze from their parents. Another perk I got, being the oldest in my family, is that I got to go to the bars when I was 16. That's one thing my mother let me do. Wasn't she great? As long as I woke her up and told her when I was home. So I would stumble into her room and, you know, knock on the, fall all over on the bed and, you know, almost fall in on her. And she'd say to me the next morning, "Oh, you were a little bit under the weather last night, weren't you?" Kind of. During that time, Janis Joplin was coming up and being very popular, and I loved her. I loved her because she was so intense and really sad, and she, like, knew it. She knew what was going on. And she drank. She drank like you're supposed to drink, right from the bottle. And so that's what I did. Southern Comfort is one of the worst tasting alcohol I have ever had. I think it's horrible. I can't believe how much of it I drank. But I did. I drank a lot of it just to be just like her, just like her. I moved to after being in a few relationships here and there, I ended up in San Francisco in the early 80s. And my drinking was, let's see, I started drinking maybe when I was 20. By this time, I was 31-ish, and I did a lot of drinking. And I didn't have the little shut-off mechanism that I see a lot of my friends have. I'd go to the bars with some of my friends, and they'd be like, "You know, I'm kind of high. I think I'll get a Coke." Who says that? No, nobody in this room, right? Or, I think I'll drink water tonight. Or, okay. So I would, you know, go to the bars with all my friends and go to the bars alone a lot. I had no qualms whatsoever about drinking by myself in the bars or at home. And I had a little system that I had for myself. I would put my drinking money in one pocket and my getting home money in the other. And it worked really well for the most part. But one night I went to Peg's. Am I screaming into the microphone? Okay. One night, no. One night I went to Peg's place. Remember when there were bars, actual bars in San Francisco? So I was living at a friend's house then who's a musician who had a lot of expensive equipment in her house and a lot of guitars and big things to, you know, record on and all kinds of stuff. So I went to Peg's and I got in the cab really, really drunk. And when it got time to pay the cab, I realized that, uh-oh, My drinking pocket, I mean my going home pocket is empty, and so is my other pocket, and I had no money. So the cab driver took me to Ocean Beach and left me there. I just remember snippets of this. I know there was like a lot into it because this was hours, but this is, so I, how am I going to get home? My friend lived on Masonic and Geary, so it was a ways. And it was 2:30 in the morning. So I hitched. And I never hitch. I'm scared of everything. I'm like a marshmallow inside. So for me to hitch was, I just did it because I was drunk. That's the only reason I did it. I would have never done it under any other circumstances. And some really nice guy picked me up. The next thing I remember is I'm sitting in my friend's apartment, totally naked, saying, "I'm a lesbian," and snorting his cocaine. I wanted to make sure I was perfectly clear about my sexuality that night. And then, the next morning I woke up and he was gone, and there was this really lovely note from him, "I like you," or written in his phone number, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, and threw it away. I just got a glimpse of the interpreter over here, and this is my ex-partner, who's such a dear friend of mine, and I'm just so thrilled that she's interpreting for me tonight. It's my... She's going to fill in the parts that I forget, she promises. And keep me really honest. Okay, so anyway, I'm going to work, and some really strange things are happening to me. A, all of a sudden I can't stand the smell of coffee. B, I'm at Baskin-Robbins every single day eating pecan and praline ice cream. Every day. I'm kind of moody. And then one morning I wake up and I have really stray hair everywhere. And I wake up and my eyelashes are so curly that they're hitting the top of my eyelid. And it looked like I had slept on my face. Which I could have, but I don't think I did that night. So I go in the bathroom and I wet them and they got even curlier. It was so bizarre. So I ended up calling a friend of mine and giving her my symptoms. And she said, are you pregnant? I'm not pregnant. I'm a lesbian. Again with the lesbian thing, it's not working. So I was pregnant. And me and the cocaine guy in my friend's apartment... I didn't feel like I had sex with a man. Normally, when I did, in the olden days, I could tell, but it just didn't seem like I did. That didn't come out the way I wanted it to, but you know what I mean, right? Okay, now, this is a really hard and sad part now. Come on. So I'm pregnant, and one of the things I thought all along, if I ever get pregnant, I'm just going to have an abortion. No big deal. But you know what? It was a really big deal. Because, the only reason I was pregnant is because I was drunk. There is no other reason. Believe me, I would have never been with a man. Never. No, I don't have anything against men. I just don't want to really be with them. So I went to Planned Parenthood and I had an abortion. After many weeks and days of prayer and thinking about it, and I was living in a tenderloin by myself, drinking and doing cocaine and LSD. Great atmosphere to bring a kid up in, right? Plus, I don't really like kids that much. They're okay. They're okay once in a while, but not on a regular basis. So I went and I had the abortion, and it was awful. It was awful. It was really painful and scary. So when I got home, I fixed myself a little cocktail, of course, and got to calm down, and called my mother and told her that what I had just done, and I just wasn't feeling right, and I wasn't feeling right for a few days, and I just kept being symptomatic, and I called them back, and they told me to come in, and when they checked me out, they said that they didn't think they got it all, so I'm going to have to give you another one. So.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
So I think that probably not that many people in this room, but a normal person would say, gee, don't you think maybe you should think about stopping drinking or something? But that wasn't my bottom. I drank for 2 more years after that. Like I said earlier, I was living in the Tenderloin, really easy to walk out the side and go right up to Polk Street and go to the bars there and just walk home. And waking up with other people's partners, another thing, I just never do it. I'm so monogamous that it's kind of gross sometimes, but I'm really monogamous. So waking up with like one of my friend's partners, like, what the hell, you know? And I had this really great outfit that I like. Remember Fry boots? I don't know how many of you would be, okay. So I had Fry boots and a black leather jacket. Okay. So I love this outfit with jeans and a t-shirt or whatever. One night I wake up, you know, my apartment, my groovy studio apartment in the Tenderloin. I wake up and I have on the Fry boots and the jacket. And that is all. So that means when I came home that night, I took all my clothes off because I couldn't get my jeans on and off with the boots on. You had to put the boots on last. So I must have taken all my clothes off and then put the jacket and the boots back on and went to sleep. So another indicator, you know, do you think maybe you should think about what you're doing here? But I didn't. Then this thing happened in my family. I have this sister, my younger sister, who I helped raise, and since I'm the oldest one in the family and the high and mighty and the most knowledgeable, nobody can ever tell me anything. Oh, I better hurry up. And so she got arrested and spent a night in jail and got a DWI and had to go to AA. So she called me and told me all about AA and how happy she was about it. Oh my God, you never have to drink again. I said, I don't have to drink. What do you mean never have to drink? Oh, I was like all defensive because, you know, like now I didn't have my buddy to party with. I mean, we used to sit around at night and drink and discuss the family's problems in quite the detail and figure out exactly what they all should be doing. And of course, not remembering anything the next day. But anyway, so I went back. My sister's in the audience, by the way. Joe, just stand up just a second. That's my little sister. So I went back east to see her get married sober, which was phenomenal. I didn't even know people did anything, you know, big sober. So she had like a few tables of the AA people. She had a few tables of the people that not yet in AA, but soon. And she did the first dance sober. She toasted with Perrier. And, you know, when you go in the limousine, you got that picture with the drink. You know, she had more sparkly water there. And it was just magnificent to see her get, you know, stay sober during a big thing like that. And I was in the bathroom snorting cocaine and smoking doobies with my brother, drinking, and you can see the progression of it through the pictures. I don't remember the reception at all. I don't remember it. And it's, I mean, what kind of life is this? So she definitely planted the seed. So I never had too much problem before or after AA with the whole God concept. I have believed in God my whole life, and I still do. But one night I'm praying, and I'm not sure about what, but I was on my knees, really drunk, and I fell over. And I'm such a Catholic, I was like, oh my God, I fell over in the sight of the Lord. And and you better do something about that. But what it really did was like, I got serious then. Like, okay, what am I going to do about this? So the friend that I stayed in who, you know, where I got pregnant in that apartment was telling me about the Monday night lesbian AA meeting that I should go. So I stopped drinking for a couple days and I thought, I'll just see. So, I got through one day. It wasn't that bad. Eating a few Snickers bars, that's okay. Got through a week, and then I went to the meeting. And what I was expecting when I went to the meeting was a bunch of, like, people from, what was the name of the place? You remember it. Kip, help me. No, the other place. No, the one in the garage. Scott's. Scott's Pit. I expected to be able to be, like, the Scott's Pit people. All of them, you know, really kind of dark and raincoats and... I didn't say that. But what happened when I walked in is like the women in there looked like the women in here. Everybody had a big smile on their face. Everybody was really clear-eyed and really happy. And there were so many women. That's where everybody in the bars was. That's where they all started going, was that meeting. So I loved it. I just took right away to AA. I thought it was, and still do, think it's one of the greatest things on the whole entire planet. I did the steps. I pretty much, as you know, as a recovering Catholic, I still sort of do what I'm told. I did the steps like I was told. I got a sponsor. I went to meetings all the time, and I just love the program. I love AA. I am eternally grateful that there's something that existed that we could go into, see people that are doing the same thing we're doing, and see that they can get through life, kind of like what my sister did. They can get through big and little things in their life and without alcohol. I mean, I wasn't even sure how I was going to ever eat a steak again without a glass of red wine next to it. I just didn't know how I was going to do any of this. You know, what am I going to do if my parents die? What am I going to do if something happens to one of my sisters? Or so my father was killed in a drunken accident. He was drunk driving. And my sister called me and was hysterical on the telephone. I didn't even know who it was. And we both said almost at the same time, "We're not going to drink today. We're not going to drink today." My mother passed away about 9 years ago, and my sister and her husband are both in recovery, and we all wanted to go to a meeting Friday night, but we didn't want to leave my mother. So what we did is we had a meeting in her room. My mother was unconscious. So Joe and I and my other sister and her husband had a meeting and had the topic was acceptance. It's kind of a hard meeting to have when your mother's on her way out. After, you know, to close the meeting, we all went around her bed and said the serenity prayer around her. And my mother was really, really glad that her kids got sober and, like, broke the chain. And my sister has two daughters, and she raised them by breaking the chain. Like, they both talk about their feelings to her, and, you know, sometimes when they were little, especially, I don't want to talk about my feelings. I'm sick of talking about them. I mean, who in here ever said that to their parents? Hardly any of us, I bet. So we're all here to break some kind of chain in our families and where we come from. And if we just continue to show up every day and get here and be with people in the same boat as us, there's nothing more powerful than be in the presence of somebody that's in the same boat you're in. The very first Christmas I was sober, I fell down the stairs and broke my back. I probably wouldn't have done that if I was drunk, I bet. But anyway. We don't know that for sure. So I'm trying to get to what's going on with me today. And there's a lot of things going on today, actually. I have the best life. I have such a great life. I have such a great life. I have such great friends. And like my ex-partners are here, and I got married to my partner this year, and we're, you know, I'm so grateful. I was thinking before, because it was kind of hot in here, like 10 seconds before I came up here, and I was thinking, wow, I remember when I used to perspire, when I used to sweat, and I would sweat out vodka, and now I felt like I was sweating out gratitude. You know, just the pure gratitude. That's what I'm in today. That's what I'm in today. So some of the things that are going on with me today, I have a really hard time talking about. Because when I tell you, you'll know why. So I broke my back, and For the last 20 or so, 25 years, I've been kind of dealing with it on and off, and 4 or 5 years ago, it became chronic. That's why this chair is here. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to stand for this long, but so far, I don't know about sitting on a bar stool. There's kind of something about that. But Dylan, thank you anyway for the chair, wherever you are. So I did acupuncture, I did massage, I did chiropractic, I had injections, I had shock, I had, what else did I have? I don't know what else. Lots of things. I'm not a candidate for surgery. I have osteoporosis, which I found out when I broke both my arms about 5 years ago. I have to tell you what I just because I need to tell you. I was going to the movies and I tripped on the carpet in the movie theater and I broke both my arms. But I didn't know I broke them and they just hurt, so I went and watched the movie. Could you know? We don't know. We don't know. Like, and the movie was Fracture. I swear to God. So anyway, so the thing I had to do to take care of myself with back pain is to take pain medication. So I'm here to tell you, and I'm scared to talk about this, because I talked about being a Christian in sobriety and got kind of like got talked to after the meeting. I talked about taking Prozac in recovery and kind of got talked to after the meeting. And so I take morphine, and I take Vicodin, and I take Oxycontin. And I have to, because I don't want to lead. I didn't get sober to be in pain for the rest of my life. I can't even work anymore. I'm on disability, so. What's the sign for crying? So when they asked me to speak last year, I said, no, I'm not going to, because there's no way I could stand up here and not say it, because I work a program of honesty. I do. I don't go and, you know, just shout this out, but I couldn't stand up here and not talk about that. And I've been in, my therapist must be so sick of, that's all I do in therapy is talk about this. Is it okay? You think it's okay? You really think it's okay? I don't, because my sobriety is the most important thing in my life. It goes before anything, and nothing is gonna prevent me from being sober as long as I have something to do about it. So nobody's coming up and dragging me out of the meeting. I'm kind of surprised. La 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 la. La 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 la. But I am clean and sober, and I take morphine. If it was me sitting out there, I'd be like, mm-hmm. You know, that's why I'm scared of being judged, because that's what I'd be doing. I think I would. But I hope, what I really hope is, I don't hope anybody's hurting in the rooms, but I hope that if anybody is, or if anybody's struggling with this, that you don't have to struggle alone. I mean, you can come up and talk to me if you want to. I tried to start a meeting last year. I had 3 or 4 people all excited on email and on the phone. And then when I wanted to start it, nobody called me. Everybody got scared. I know that's what it was. I talked about it in medications in sobriety last year at the workshop, but I didn't say which drug I was on, because last year I was the chair, and I really thought if somebody knew that I was taking this stuff, that they would ask me to step down. And I didn't want to step down. I didn't think I deserved to step down. But I don't know if I could have stayed here if somebody would have said, you know, we really think you shouldn't do this. There's still nobody coming up to get me. So I'm just going to leave you with just my gratitude just my undying gratitude for this program, for any kind of service you can do here. If you can work on Living Sober, this is my 27th Living Sober in a row. And I love the conference. It's so great to be here. It's just—it's great to be part of it. It's great not to be. It's okay to speak. You know, now it's almost over. It's really great to speak. And but I just—and everybody in here who's ever talked to me or ever looked my way or ever helped me in any way imaginable with my sobriety, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And the people, my little fan club sitting over here. I have a couple really, really good friends here that I have known for 28 years sitting here. It's powerful. It's powerful. And no matter what happens, you do not have to drink. You do not have to. I promise you don't have to. Thank you.
This recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.